It's gone through a couple of different editions now, but The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. It's a great book, and at the end of each chapter, he's got some discussion questions. So if you personally want to put together, say, a study of some friends or coworkers or something like that, at the end of each chapter, you can kind of work through some of these discussion questions. They're really useful. It would be another good way to approach this book would be for, like a separate spin-off adult class of for us to all get the book and we would read it together and kind of work through some of those things. But I wanted to hit some of the highlights for you. We're skipping quite a bit because we spent so much time on things like how we got the Gospels, how can we know that the Gospels have been passed down to us reliably and things like that. And so I wanted to get something that is kind of different. But it still is, it's still something that needs to be talked about because every now and then I hear this kind of pop up. But before we get that, remember what I said the last few weeks? When you're talking about Christianity to someone, what's the first thing that you should bring up? Or what's the first thing that, first person or first thing that you should talk about? Jesus. Yeah, Jesus. Would anybody disagree and say maybe you should start somewhere else? They may have never heard of Jesus. Okay, that's an idea. If they've never heard of Jesus, though, that's kind of a golden opportunity. Maybe they don't have any preconceived ideas about who Jesus was or what he did and said. Maybe, but presumably if you're talking with them about Christianity, they might have some interest. So. But Joe's right, and I know usually we joke about when we're kids, what the Sunday school answer is always Jesus. How did God do this? Jesus made it, stuff like that. Why are roses red? Jesus. Well, maybe not so much, but maybe. Anyway, but no, we go to Jesus. We go to Jesus, and we can talk about the Gospels, are they reliable? Have they been transmitted accurately? One of the chapters that I skipped, which is I'm happy to talk about at some other point later with y'all, is what archaeology can tell us about the world of the New Testament, and does that not corroborate and agree with some of the things that we read in the New Testament? And the guy that he interviews for that chapter, he passed away a couple of years ago, but he was Dr. John McCrae, a member of the Churches of Christ, who taught at Wheaton College in Illinois. Very sharp guy, and I've actually met Dr. McCrae a couple times. Just a wonderful New Testament archaeologist. But so when you're talking with somebody and you start talking about Jesus and they start asking questions about, okay, well, is the Bible reliable? Does this actually give me a full picture? Does it give me a real picture? What about the agenda that maybe some of these folks might have when they put all this together? Sometimes people do ask the question, and this may surprise you, but sometimes people do ask the question, did Jesus really die on the cross? Have any of y'all been asked that before? Have you ever heard anybody say Jesus didn't die on the cross? But his body, which means that he probably would have died, but have you heard anybody say that Jesus didn't die on the cross, that he fainted and they just thought he was dead? Whit, you were shaking your head, yes.
he carried the cross and then put it up there instead of Jesus, and then also the possibility that he had not fully died.
Yeah. Simon of Cyrene. It would be crazy how they might make that mistake, though. They're not going to let beaten and bloodied and bruised Jesus run off while they're making Simon carry the crossbeam, and they're going to lose Jesus in the crowd. Yeah, that wouldn't happen. But it's interesting. So people do try to make this kind of argument. I don't know if you're aware of that, But some people, in order to discredit the resurrection, some people will argue, well, it never happened. There was no resurrection because he never died in the first place. Sounds pretty crazy, doesn't it? Sounds pretty crazy. But some people do go to elaborate means to try to argue this. So they say that he only appeared dead. He swooned. That's the technical term that gets thrown around a lot. The swoon theory. He swooned. He fell out. He passed out. He was unconscious. And then at some point, his disciples, so the theory goes, his disciples managed to get him out of the tomb, you know, despite the fact that it was guarded by soldiers. They managed to get him out of the tomb, or that he himself managed to get out of the tomb and appeared to the disciples. Now think about everything that Jesus went through. He had been flogged and beaten severely. He had been crucified. And then he passed out, didn't receive medical attention for days, manages to roll away a massive stone. I hope you can begin to see some of the ridiculousness of this. He managed to roll away this massive stone, and then he appears to the disciples and say, "Look, I've beaten death. Here I am." While he's on his last leg. But that's how some people try to argue it. So, the question that Lee Strobel wants to answer in this chapter, titled "The Medical Evidence," the question that Lee Strobel wants to answer in this chapter is, did Jesus really die on the cross? Now, that seems like a silly question to us, because we've always read, yes, Jesus died on the cross. But again, if you're talking with someone who maybe has never heard of Jesus before, which is probably rare, but maybe they just don't know that much about Jesus. I was at Brookside on Wednesday, mentoring with my kid. And he had some of his buddies there from class, and we were sitting in one of the other teachers' rooms, and a couple of the teachers were around the other table. And we were talking about holidays. I was asking them what they were going to dress up for Halloween, you know, what's their favorite holiday, stuff like that. They started talking about Christmas, and one of the little girls, I think it was actually the girl that Heather mentors, she was saying, "You can't say Christmas. Don't say Christmas because everybody loves Christmas." So they started talking about Christmas, and it was fascinating to me. I don't know that these kids are churched. Like, I don't know that they go to church anywhere. And it was wild to me because they were describing it as God's birthday. Not Jesus's, God's birthday. And in the middle of that conversation, I kind of just paused everything and shut everything out for a minute and thought, all right, am I going to try to fix the theology of fifth graders here? Is that what I need to do? You know, as the minister in me said, correct that. Don't let that slide. But, I mean, by the time that I had decided that I wasn't going to, they had already moved on and were starting to talk about why they believe or disbelieve in the Easter Bunny. So, you know, that's how it goes with fifth graders. But, I mean, so if you're talking with somebody like that who kind of has some misunderstandings or maybe not a complete picture of what's going on with things related to Jesus, you know, some people might not know that crucifixion is such a big deal. They might not know that crucifixion was, I mean, it was the final word. You didn't make it through crucifixion. And what's interesting is that from a medical standpoint, you know, based on modern medicine, from doctors who have gone through med school and everything, they're able to look at not just what the Bible says about crucifixion, but also other descriptions and other evidence for what crucifixion actually did to the body, what it physically did to the body. And that's what this chapter is about. So I'm going to warn you ahead of time. If you get a little squeamish, don't look at the screen. Because I've got some pictures, not of real things. They're drawings, they're illustrations. They're illustrations from an article that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which is a big deal. And it talks about Jesus' crucifixion from a medical standpoint. It's not a Christian journal, but I mean, it's a very well-respected, scholarly, peer-reviewed journal. And it also makes the case. There's no chance that Jesus, let alone anybody else, could have survived crucifixion. So, anyway. The next interview is with a guy named Alexander Metherell. I couldn't get a picture of him because I couldn't figure out which one he was. There were a lot of different people showed up on Google Images when I was trying to find a picture of it, and Strobel doesn't have any pictures in the book here. But he is, he's an MD, and he has a PhD, very smart guy. And Lee Strobel says this about him. I wanted to read this description, just kind of let you know a little bit about who he is. He's a former research scientist who's taught at the University of California. He's editor of 5 scientific books and has written for publications ranging from Aerospace Medicine, that's a journal. Ernie, you subscribe to that one, right? that's on your coffee table. to Scientific American. And it says that some of his work has been published in journals like The Physiologist and Biophysics Journal. Adam, you've got that one, right? Appreciate you guys being there for me. And so, this is a sharp dude. He knows what he's talking about. So in the Garden of Gethsemane, what does the New Testament say, what do the Gospels say happens to Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane when he's praying? Sweated drops of blood. Or his sweat was like drops of blood. Strobel asked the question, wait a minute, how is that possible? How can that actually happen? It's a condition, it's an actual medical condition known as hematidrosis. Hematidrosis. And here's a definition of it. And here's a picture. You can see this young lady is sweating, talking about the glare. And right here on her chin, the contrast isn't great. But right here on her chin, see what looks like blood? This is someone who is sweating blood. A picture of someone who is sweating blood. Right there on her chin. Here's what hematidrosis is. It's a condition in which capillary blood vessels. Sue, what are capillary blood vessels? The little tiny ones, right? Little tiny blood vessels that are right underneath the surface of the skin. Okay? Hematidrosis is a condition in which capillary blood vessels that feed the sweat glands rupture. So these little blood vessels rupture, causing them to exude blood. Under conditions of extreme physical or emotional stress. Robin, you're just in time. We need another nurse in here because we're talking about hematidrosis. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. And any of our medical personnel over here, feel free to correct me. Severe mental anxiety activates the sympathetic nervous system to invoke the stress, fight, or flight reaction to such a degree as to cause hemorrhage of the vessels supplying the sweat glands into the ducts of the sweat glands. So it's not a lot of blood, but this is a diagnosable medical condition that the Gospels mention that Jesus was suffering from. And remember, what did I just say is the cause of this? Under conditions of extreme physical or emotional stress. Put yourself in Jesus' shoes for a minute. Or sandals, as the case may be. Jesus is experiencing the physical and emotional stress of what he knows is about to happen in the next day or day and a half, in the next day, really. He knows he's going to be put on trial. He knows he's going to be beaten. He knows he's going to be crucified. I would say that that categorizes, that qualifies as extreme emotional stress, wouldn't you? So, as you can see here, it's not a lot of blood. That's not a lot of blood. Your capillaries, those tiny little blood vessels, they don't carry a lot of blood. It's not like a major artery or something. But this is a real thing that does occasionally happen. It's rare. It's rare. But if this is what the Gospels are describing, then this, I mean, here's a shot of it. And so a side effect of this would be that the skin would be especially sensitive. Your skin would be especially sensitive. Well, what's the next punishment? What's the next thing that Jesus goes through? The beatings, the floggings, the torture. This is a drawing of a whip. Remember this article I mentioned in the Journal of the American Medical Association? I've got a picture of it later. It's on the death of Jesus Christ, or Jesus of Nazareth, which, whatever it is. So this comes from that. It's an article published in 1986. This is the kind of whip that they would normally use for flogging prisoners. It's like it. And there's some variations, but it's like it. And it's got everything that you need to inflict maximum punishment with minimum effort. It wouldn't handle these leather thongs here, the leather strips, have either tied or woven into them sharp pieces of bone and little metal balls, almost like ball bearings. And it's designed to, when you hit flesh, it bruises and cuts upon the first strike. Now, how many times did they normally strike prisoners? 39. The 40 minus 1, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no. Well, that's if they're actually playing by the rules. Who would stop them from doing more? And so it was normally 39 lashes, but it was often more. And as I just mentioned, you can see here this thing is called the flagrum. You've got this little small bone here that's sharp. I mean, the leather's going to hurt anyway. But if it's got bone and metal in it, which it's essentially shrapnel, and that's coming at you. You know what? When you're growing up, did you ever roll up a towel and like pop your friends? or maybe growing up, maybe you did that the other day. Do you know why at the end of it there's that cracking sound? Do you know why that causes that? What's that, Robert? Yeah. At the end of that rat tail, at the end of that towel, it gets moving so fast down there that it breaks the speed of sound, and so it's a mini little sonic boom right there. It sounds a lot larger when it's, you know, like an F-22 screaming overhead or something like that. But at the end of a towel, that's what it is. They were able to get near those kinds of speeds with this. And these guys were experts in killing. Roman soldiers did not go to medical school, but they knew how to inflict punishment on someone. And so Jesus goes through this. Started off with deep bruises and contusions of the back, and eventually it would open up the skin and could, unfortunately, even expose bone. All right, just so we're all on the same page here, what is the big bone in your back? Spine. Is there a lot of important stuff in the spine, medical ladies, nurses? Would it hurt to be hit back there repeatedly with something like this? Yeah. So, according to our doctor here who is being interviewed, Jesus probably begins suffering from what is known as hypovolemic shock. What is hypovolemic shock? So hypo, we can break that word into three parts. Hypo means low, like hypothermia. Vol, or related to volume, and emic comes from the Greek word hema, which is blood. So low blood volume. Your body starts to react in certain ways because it's trying to tell you that something wrong is happening. So Jesus begins experiencing what is called hypovolemic shock. And here's what he says about that. Hypovolemic shock does four things to the body. It said, first, the heart races to try to pump blood that isn't there. Second, the blood pressure drops, causing fainting or collapse. Third, the kidneys stop producing urine to maintain what volume is left. And fourth, the person becomes very thirsty as the body craves fluids to replace the